We are working our way, as you recall, through the communicable attributes of God, the various things that we possess in our nature as those who were made in the image of God. We are image bearers, which means that we possess these attributes as a part of what it means to be the pinnacle of God's creation and the one creature to which he has granted these various attributes. And they're part of what we call the Imago Dei that's been given to us from the very character of God through the creation of Adam. You remember when he was formed from the dust of the ground, God breathed into him, and the necessary result of that is that the various attributes of God's image was transferred into him by virtue of that. And we've already looked at a few of these, specifically the ones that are sort of the governing, I call them the governing attributes, because they're the three most significant, and they are intelligence, volition, and emotion. Okay, those are sort of the three legs of the stool upon which the image of God stands. The rest of these all flow out of those three in some sense, but they're distinguishable because they're necessary to see as distinctions away from these three specifically, because they expand upon what it is that the image of God really looks like in us. Okay, so we moved from those three to knowledge, which is, what is knowledge then in the image of God? The ability to learn, okay, or the ability to retain information. We have the ability to collect and retain information. We have the ability to learn. Now, if what we said about the incommunicable attributes of God is that God does not learn, how can we call this then an attribute of God? If God does not learn, how can we call this then an attribute of God being given to us in the Imago Dei? There's nothing more for him to learn, so God is not a learning being, right? I mean, as omniscient, there's nothing more to learn, for he knows all things, and he knows all things exhaustively. I mean, he knows every detail of everything that could ever possibly be, as well as all that is and is not. Therefore, if we are creatures that learn, how can we say that knowledge is actually a part of the Imago Dei? Okay, right. Which implies that he does possess knowledge. As a being, he would possess knowledge, and we have the ability to possess knowledge. But I'm looking specifically at the side of the learning side of the equation. If God doesn't learn, then how can we say that our ability to learn comes from him? I'm not sure about that. See, I'm not sure that I would say that learning is a corruption. Did Adam learn prior to the fall? Probably did, right? I mean, he learned of things. I mean, after all, the animals were all paraded in front of him, so he was probably learning who these creatures are and giving them names. So, okay. It's our limitation as creature. Yeah, exactly. That's precisely right. These are, remember I said, and this is the reason I asked the question, we were talking last week, it's a matter not of quality, but of quantity. We're not talking here about attributes of God being given to us in a quantity equal to what God possesses, but in a quality that is, in a sense, coming from God. The quality of that being that God is a God who possesses an ability to know. He doesn't possess the ability to learn, for he knows all things. But he passes on to us then, in the qualitative sense, the ability to learn. The quantity of that is not infinite. Which means, exactly right, as creatures, we are not designed to be omniscient, but yet we are designed to be creatures who can possess knowledge and can grow in that knowledge. And I think the scriptures are clear that we will continue to grow in knowledge for all eternity. We will never exhaust the nature of an infinite God. For we will never be infinite. We are creatures. We're not divine. And so we will continue to learn of this God. He will continue to reveal more and more of himself to us through time. And we will learn more and more even about his creation, because I believe that the nature of this creation is beyond our comprehension even now, and will continue to be as time goes by, even through eternity. And so the net result is we will continue to learn. Our image bearing will continue to have that nature in it. Okay? Correct. That's correct. And we're going to be spending some time in that in Ephesians 4 here in the not too distant future, Lord willing. Okay, now number 5 on this list then is something I call rationality. All right, what is rationality? How is it different from knowledge, and what is it? What is it? Now, is it different from knowledge? Put it that way. What is rationality? Think through what kind of things. Okay, a word that we might use there instead of logical would be complex matters, okay? Certainly they would be logical. I would agree with that utterly. We have the ability to understand logic. Rationality, then, is the ability to deduce and consider complex concepts. Concepts that are not intuitively obvious from within the creation itself. We're able to think about things. Are we able to think of things that do not exist? How do I know that? What's the proof of that? No, they exist. What's that? Unicorns. Very good example. We have the ability to imagine a creature called a unicorn that doesn't exist, but every 6 or 8 year old girl has had some introduction to a unicorn, right? And they don't find that hard to believe. Yep. Uh-huh. Very good. There you go, a ratio of this to this. This is this, this is this, okay? We have built an entire industry around the idea of things that don't exist. What is that? Entertainment. The entertainment industry, Bigfoot. Yeah, but I would say that's all lumped within the whole area of entertainment. We have the ability to create complex worlds on film and in books, right? That don't exist. And they never will. But we can imagine them. So we have the ability to rationalize. Now we'll come to that again in another characteristic. But we have the ability to think through and rationalize things that are beyond our comprehension. Now, someone mentioned math. Or you mentioned 2 plus 2 or numbers. But there is a sense in which even math, they call it irrational numbers. Right? We understand the concept of rational numbers, but there's also such a category as irrational. Imaginary numbers. And yet we can imagine them. Even though we can rationally, we can do math built upon the concept of imaginary and irrational numbers. We have the ability to understand in scientific terms concepts that are beyond our imagination. Much in quantum physics is beyond our comprehension. But yet we can rationally think through these matters. Okay? So we possess not just knowledge, which is the ability to retain and understand information, but the ability to actually compute that stuff, to take it and do things with it. Okay? Which leads us then to a category which I call truthfulness. All right? What is truthfulness? It's a rare idea in a fallen world, but it's got to be on the list. What is the character attribute of God when we say that God is truthful? Okay? You've used the word to describe the word, to define the word. That's illegal. I don't know. We'll think of one. How do you understand the concept of truthfulness from God's perspective? Okay, maybe. Let's put that in a different category, okay? Yeah, I know you are, yeah. And you're a little ahead of me, so, you know, hold on. Truthfulness is the ability to think and act according to what is true. to make a distinction between what is true and what is false. Now, notice I'm not saying between what is right and what is wrong. I'm saying between what is true and what is false. 4 plus 4 is not 2. Right? That's a falsity. There's a truth to a 2 plus 2 equals 4. There's a truth there. So we have the ability to distinguish between what is true and what is false. God has an infinite capacity to understand the difference between what is true and what is false, because in his omniscience, he is able to look at all things and understand that is not true and that is true. We have a limited sense of that, but nonetheless, we have that ability. I mean, we have the ability to distinguish between this and this. Now, I'm not talking in moral categories here. We'll get to that in a moment. I'm talking simply in terms of fact. We can determine the difference between what is factual and what is fictional, right? Of course. Truth is without error. Yep. Thus, we have the ability to distinguish between error and non-error. Okay, when we talk about error, we might talk about somebody doing something that's in error. You know? And then... What's that?
Add 2 and 2 and get 5.
Yeah, add 2 and 2 and get 5. Or, you know, a student taking a test, he picks B instead of C on the test. He's supposed to pick C. He gets an error. It's wrong. He hasn't distinguished between what is true and what is false. We have the ability to do that. If we've learned the answers to the questions, we have the ability to discern between what is true and what is false. That's an attribute of God and something that we possess. Notice, it's not present in the animal kingdom. Animals are not making rational judgments between this is true and this is false. Walk up to a cow and ask them. Here's 2 plus 2. Is that 4? And they look at you like, I don't understand. Your language doesn't make sense to me. I hear noise. I don't hear language. Okay? They're not able to make the distinction between what is true and what is false. So that's truthfulness. God has given to us an ability to distinguish, okay? Which moves us then into the next category, which is the category of wisdom. Now, what is wisdom? Now, that's one of those biblical words, right? Okay, and let's put an adjective on the front of application. Say that louder. The proper application of knowledge. Yes, that's my definition. You've stolen it. The wisdom is the proper application of knowledge. Now notice, it's built slightly on the idea of truthfulness, because in order to be wise, one should know the difference between what is true and what is false, and one should be able to rationally deduce the difference between this and this, and one should retain the knowledge of being able to understand it. So when you put all three of those together, you would eventually come to the idea of wisdom, which is the ability to take knowledge and apply it to whatever situation, to reality, using fact to determine the best course of action, or the best outcome, or the best understanding of a particular situation. That's called wisdom. So it's one thing to have knowledge. It's another thing to have wisdom. Because there's a lot of people that have knowledge. And they're as dumb as a post. You know, morally speaking. You know. It's knowledge with understanding. There you go. I think it comes, the way that I put it on this list is you come with intelligence, which is an ability that you naturally possess, which leads to knowledge, which leads to rationality, which leads to the distinguishing between truth and false, which leads to wisdom. There's a building block here. I possess an ability to think, and then I take that thinking and the ability to collect knowledge and information. And then I have the ability to rationally consider that information. And then I have the ability to distinguish between this is true and this is false. And then ultimately from there, I go, in this particular situation, this would be the correct course of action, not this. Notice how this works. So knowledge and wisdom are distinguishable or distinguished in the Imago Dei. They're not the same thing. God's wisdom, of course, is tied up with his infinite knowledge of all things. Having an infinite knowledge of all things would make you wise by definition, because you would know everything that is true and everything that is false. Because you've already, by virtue of this vast knowledge that you have, been able to deduce and consider these complex concepts and decide between this and this. We've been given a similar ability. An ability to look at this and this and say, this is the best course of action. Or this is the best response. Or this is the best understanding of this particular matter. Right? Look at the evidence. Make a decision. So that's the order of this. Which then leads... Now, to the next one, which is morality. What is the attribute of morality? Okay, now we move to distinguishing between right and wrong. Up until now, we've been working in the category of true and false. Now we're moving to right and wrong. The ability to distinguish between and discern between what is good or evil or right and wrong, and the ability to choose good, right. Yep. The ability to choose the good, the ability to choose the right. We have the ability to make a choice here. We are not creatures that are driven by instinct. We are creatures driven by the ability to think, the ability to retain knowledge, the ability to rationalize, the ability to distinguish between what is true and what is false, the ability to decide which path is the best, and ultimately to base that decision upon which path is right and which path is wrong. Now, what is the basis for all morality? What is the basis for all morality? Now, nope. God. Just throw words until you get the right one. There you go. The basis of all morality is God Himself. What's that? Not necessarily. There's a distinction between the Word and the Scripture, between the Word and God. God is God, the Word is the Word, they are not the same. So I had to mark you, you didn't make a distinction between true and false correctly in that particular case, so sorry. No, we're talking about God. His character is the basis, His decrees, His laws, His purposes, His intentions, His nature, everything about Him is the distinction of what makes anything right or wrong. Because you see, if we remove God from the equation, what's wrong? You don't have a standard. Right? It's like the atheist who says, I don't believe in God, but I'm pretty sure I don't want some guy stealing my stuff. Well, now you're stealing from a Christian worldview when you say, no one should steal my stuff. Because the fact is, if you don't have a God, you don't have a basis for morality. You don't have any sort of standard beyond yourself. Standards. You have plural standards. And if you have plural standards, you don't have a standard. What you have is anarchy. Everybody does what's right in their own eyes. It's perfectly fine for me to do that. In fact, the survival of the fittest says I should steal your stuff and kill you because you're obviously less valuable to the food chain than I am. So morality, ethics, any sort of division of right and wrong is a part of our nature. It's not just something we do. It is a part of who we are at our very core, and it's built on the fact that we are formed by a creator. So all philosophical arguments that have to do with right or wrong in the world ultimately come down to the necessity of a God, a creator who's established a standard. Otherwise, there is no standard. Thus, there's no morality or ethics. Thus, we are free to do whatever we want to do. Now, if you play that in reverse, okay, it's like putting the record on the record player and turning it in reverse. That's exactly what fallen human beings want to do. They want to eliminate God. Why? So the standard goes away so that they can behave and do whatever they want to do. I don't want a God telling me what to do. Now, by the way, that is the argument of Romans 1. God turns them over, says, fine, you don't want me? Fine, go do what you want to do. And here's what happens. You sink into ever greater levels of depravity because if you don't want God, you'll sink into the standard that you have established, which is actually much, much lower than the standard of God. So we have a natural morality within our very nature, okay? So what is the attribute, the next attribute? What is goodness? Okay? Okay? Yep. Okay, the ability to desire what is right and, more specifically, to apply that to how you relate to others. Goodness is a sense in which we have an ability to act favorably towards others, to be generous, kind, merciful, just, etc., as we deal with other human beings. Now, why do I have this on the list? Well, okay. That's like Homer Simpson would say, right? Yeah. Okay. Right, okay, but why is it an attribute? Why don't we just call it an action? Why do we call it an attribute? Because it is the character of God. Okay, I would concede that point, yes. What's that? That's correct. That's probably the best answer. That the only source of goodness is God himself. We are creatures created in the image of God, but we were given a sense of goodness from our God. We were given an ability to act favorably towards others. In the animal kingdom, this does not exist. Do they act good towards one another? In a sense, they do. In a sense, they will, in fact, attempt to protect their own, and they will, you know, certainly. But when you stop and think about it, there's a whole lot of non-goodness in the animal kingdom, isn't there? And in some ways, it's eat or be eaten, right? So, in the human creature, God has given from his own nature an actual ability for us to consider someone else and act favorably towards them, even if it is against our best interests to do so. So notice it flows out of the morality attribute I just gave you. So as we move away from the morality aspect, now we're talking about how we relate to others. Now, I would agree utterly with you that this is the reason why we have it is because God is good. And God is always good. God always does what is good. We may not look at it that way, right? We look at a tragedy and we say, how can that possibly be good? But from God's economy, it is. It's perfectly good in his sight. It may not be good in the sense that it's sinful, but it's good in the sense of his decrees and purposes. Now, that's hard to distinguish for us because we assume that the cause and the reason must be the same. Thus, if it's good in cause, it must be good in reason and vice versa. God doesn't think in those categories, fortunately. God's decrees are greater than the actual events. Thus, good itself is not defined by the events. Good itself is defined by the decree over the top, which, by the way, is why it is essential that Christians must embrace the idea that there is a decree. Because if there is no decree of God, then there is actually no definition of the concept of good. And everything that happens in this world is without purpose. It simply happens. Obviously. Obviously. But I would argue this isn't even revelation. This is in the Imago Dei. It's stamped into us is the ability to understand goodness experientially and characterally. We are able to understand the concept of goodness. Okay? Which leads then to some, now, I'm going to break at this point and we'll talk about some other attributes that are just sort of in us by virtue of being creatures created in the image of God. Okay? Communication. as an attribute. What is the attribute of communication or communicativeness? Correct. And what would be some intentional means? Words, language, and other forms of communication. Sorry? Other forms of communication, body language, gesture, tone, inflection. A lot of things, by the way, that disappear when you text. Right? Parts of the communication spectrum that you lose by using technology, which causes all kinds of problems when people read your text and they don't get what you're saying because the inflection's missing. And that doesn't even work. The ability to communicate, to use language, to rationally communicate concepts through language, either through verbal or nonverbal means, through obvious, explicit, or implicit methods. Big, long definition, but it's basically the ability to talk. Okay? The ability to speak. Now, this is obvious within us, right? I mean, we're using this particular ability, and I've always been fascinated by it. I could tell you, when my granddaughter was born, and this little, you know, I'm sorry if this offends you, I don't mean to, but this little pink vegetable that was, you know, there she is, and she's got no ability on her own, but she begins to grow, and she learns how to talk. And now she's become a little jabberbox, right? She hasn't even learned how to use a toilet yet, but she knows how to talk. Now think about that. Do you think it's harder to learn how to use a toilet than it is how to learn how to talk? Apparently not. Apparently, learning to talk, to take and listen to people speak and learn language and put it into coherent sentences and communicate, apparently is easier than using a toilet for humans. That's amazing to me. I just don't get that order. I would have thought that language would have been a much more difficult process, but apparently not, because it's embedded in us. We think in words, don't we? I dare you to try not to. I dare you to try not to. But you can't do it for very long. You will use words in your head. We communicate. We are communicative creatures, okay? Which leads to something called sentience. What is sentience? Okay, and being self-aware. S-E-N-T-I-E-N-C-E. Sentience. Sentience is fundamentally, from a human perspective, the ability to be self-aware. But it's deeper than that. It goes greater than that. It's not just the ability to be self-aware, but it's to understand the concept of the self. And to add to your definition, to be able to interpret the world around you in relationship to who you are. To understand yourself. To think about yourself. And what is the one thing that we're most sentient of? And what part of ourselves? I doubt it. And, yeah, that's a little too vague. What is it that we're really sentient of? Maybe. Although it lets us down a lot, doesn't it? When we talk about sentience, we're really talking about our mortality. We live physically, we have a physical existence, and we die. And we are the only creature that has the ability to actually contemplate our own death. Here's a challenge for you. Okay, I gave you one. Try to think without using words. Try to imagine you don't exist. Go ahead. I'll give you 5 minutes. You can't. You'll run around in circles. Because you are so self-aware of your existence, because you know that you're more than the sum of your parts. Therefore, if you were to try to imagine yourself lying down on the ground and being dead, and you don't exist anymore, you can't. You can't. No, even if you're not a believer, okay, let's forget about the Christian worldview for a moment. Just try to imagine that you just suddenly stopped existing. You don't exist anymore. Good luck.
But you do.
But I know that's the problem. See, that's exactly right. It's the cat chasing his tail problem. You can't, your sentience is such that God has made you self-aware, and I would agree with the terms that you used about soul and spirit and so forth, because yes, you're imagining, you're understanding those things within who you are. The reason I called it vague is because I want to make sure that we understand the idea of our mortality, our existence in physical time and space, that we can ponder our consciousness, for example. That's the idea of sentience. Is God self-aware? Utterly, far more than we are. But he has given to us ascension, which we are able to do what no other creature is able to do, which is to actually contemplate ourselves.
I doubt,
therefore I am. Yep. Okay? Which leads to relationality. What is relationality? Okay? All right. Okay? We have an ability to cultivate relationships with other sentient beings. Relationship is more than just hanging out, right? Okay? Cows hang out. They go in groups from one place to the next. Are they having relationships with each other? Are they developing relationships? I realize there's a crude sense of connection between them. But I'm talking about genuine relationship in which you're actually communicating through these other image of God issues with another sentient being rationally, with knowledge, etc., and building relationships with them. True or false? Human beings crave relationships with other human beings. Why? Because we're social creatures. What is the worst possible punishment they can give you in prison?
Solitary.
Put you away, no other relationships, and guess what happens to people in that kind of condition over a long period of time? They go nuts. Because we are built, wired, to have contact with other people. I read a fascinating article this week, which was talking about the value of small talk. They've done research now that says that just gathering together and having small talk with people is extremely important. You know, us just coming together on a Sunday and just talking about whatever, having a little small talk, is a part of the building of relationships with other people. It's just that thing we need. Even if I just stand in an elevator and ask the person next to me, well, how's the weather? It's an essential part of the human condition. It's what we are built to be, because God is relational. How? Within the Trinity. The three persons of the Trinity have infinite and perfect harmonious relationship with one another. Eternal, perfect, harmonious relationship with one another. And he has given that to us. Thus we desire relationship. And he established it, of course, in the very foundation of creation when Adam was said, it is not good for the man to be alone. And so what did he do? He made another creature in the same image from the man to which the man could relate. This, by the way, is one of those attributes of human beings that's being destroyed in our culture. Okay? How about imaginativeness? What is imaginativeness? Now, this is a little different from rationality, in a sense. What is imaginativeness? Come on, you know what this is. It is, but it's really more of the ability to visualize. This is just the word imagine. Can you imagine? Can you foster up images in your minds of things that doesn't exist? Of course you can. We do it all the time, don't we? We have a very rich sense within us of the ability to imagine things that don't exist. And, you know, I said earlier, we were talking about an entire industry built around the idea of imagination, of being able to think about things that don't exist. We are, inside of this is this idea that we have the ability to use our mind to see beyond the physical. Now, we're physical creatures, right? Okay, let me just make sure you understand something. When we get to anthropology, I'll repeat this. But we are humans because we are physical creatures. We will never be non-physical creatures. Okay, you understand that? We are created. What was the first thing created in Adam? His body. God created the body from the dust of the ground first. Then he put the image of God in it. We will never be little spirit beings floating around with wings and No. That's not human. That's a Gnostic view that's taken over American Christianity. We are always going to be creatures created in a mortal physical body. Okay? Therefore, we have the ability that God has given to us to imagine something outside of the physical world. Can we understand the concept of angels? Can we imagine a spirit world beyond this one? Of course we can. Now, a little bit of that world breaks into this one every once in a while, right? According to Scripture, right? Angels break into this world. But the fact is, we have the ability to imagine it. We have the ability to take in our minds, not only to understand information, but the ability to see beyond the physical. Beyond what is. And I think that's a part of the omniscience of God. Because God knows all things that are, and all things that are not. Therefore, in our imagination, with the ability to imagine things that are not. Which leads to the last one on this list. We're out of time. Creativeness. What is creativeness? Great. Score. To make stuff. Right. Name some things that we've created as human beings. Okay? Architecture. Technology. Okay, I'll put that in the technology category. Okay? Entertainment? Art? Healthcare? Good. Very good. Energy? Yep. Science? We are creative. In fact, we are creative beyond our imaginations. I think I've said this before. I think I've used this example before. I'm absolutely astounded every time I walk into Walmart of the amount of stuff that human beings have dreamed up and put in that store. I mean, think about it. Think about the massive number of things that are in there that somebody had to think up, and then somebody else had to design, and somebody else had to create, and somebody else had to deliver, right? Somebody had to think this stuff up. We're extremely creative creatures. Yeah. We have the ability to create, to form, to build, to develop culture, art, science, life. And we don't have the ability to create life from the originality, but we do have the ability to form it, in a sense, to manipulate it, to use it to our advantage, if necessary, right? So the fact is that we have a massive creativeness which comes from our God, who is infinitely creative. Infinitely creative. You know, you and I see so little of God's creation. The fact is, we have such a tiny myopic view of what the creation looks like. There are billions of galaxies out there, and who knows what God has put out there that we're going to get to explore for eternity. You are never going to run out of new stuff to discover. Our God is infinitely creative. We have enough species on this planet to make that prove that point, don't we? We have enough different forms of vegetation on this planet to prove that God is infinitely creative with the things he can do. We are too. We have an ability to be creative. We're not infinitely creative, but we have an ability to be creative. So we have the ability to take and use the things that God has created in order to do very creative stuff. Now, of course. Of course, God is the only one that can create ex nihilo. Yeah. God can create from nothing. God can speak it into existence. We can't. But we can be creative nonetheless. We can use what he has given to us as the building blocks of creating other stuff. And we've done that very well. You know, we've taken out of this earth a lot of stuff and turned it into other stuff. It's quite amazing what we've been able to do. So these are the communicable attributes of God. Now I want you to stop and think about it, and this is what we're going to try to work on next week, Lord willing. We're not going to be here next week, sorry, the week after that. Okay, so next week is Thanksgiving week, so we're not going to be here. But in the next week, here's what I want you to do. I want you to think about this. Think about how each of these particular attributes has been corrupted by the fall. Okay? So I want you to go through and think about all these various abilities, intelligence, volition, emotion, knowledge, etc., and ask yourself, how has that been corrupted by the fall? How is it now limited because of the fall? How is it now perverted because of the fall? How is it now limited by, and so on. Think about how these things have been altered by sin entering into the world. The fact is that all of them have. And so therefore, I want you to think about how each of them has been corrupted. And then a second thing I want you to think about is this. When in the New Testament it talks about the fact that the Spirit of God dwells within us, my understanding of that is this. The Spirit of God indwells or invades or rather permeates every bit of the imago Dei in us. So how does the coming of the Spirit of God into a believer affect each of these in contrast to how it's been corrupted in the fall? Okay? So think first about how it's been corrupted, and then think about what is the Spirit of God now doing as a part of redeeming that particular attribute in human beings. Now, I'm not asking you to think about what it will look like after glorification. Okay? I'm asking you to think about how it has been changed now by the Spirit of God invading or permeating that particular attribute. Okay? So be thinking about that, and we'll come back and we'll put some flesh on that, because I think that's extremely important. If these are truly attributes of God given to us, they've been affected by the fall, but we should be able to see evidences that the Spirit is working to restore them, because Paul tells us in the book of Romans, I think it's chapter 8, isn't it, that God is redeeming his creation. And who is the pinnacle of his creation? That would be us. And so the Imago Dei is being affected by the Spirit of God in us. Okay? So let's be thinking about those things as we move along. So this will be after Thanksgiving that we'll come back and consider these things. Correct. Now I'm asking you to think about how specifically. Okay? All right.